Progressive Radio Network listeners. So Jackie Marie Beyer here, host of the Organic Gardener podcast. And I'm just reaching out to you today to let you know about some of the things that have been going on in the podcast that maybe you don't know about. So for one, over Christmas break, Mike and I created a free garden course. You can go to freegardencourse.com or freeorganicgardencourse.com, or just go to the Organic Gardener podcast homepage, and right on top it says click here for the free garden course. And it's just it's designed to be a lesson each month that you can listen to help you create a garden, whether you're wanting to build an earth-friendly landscape, you want to put in some deep beds, you're starting your garden journey from scratch, or even if you're looking to move to a market farmer, because a lot of my listeners I know are a little more experienced gardeners, and I think they're, you know, either, and even if you don't want to sell produce at the market, you want to be the most effective person you can be in your garden. So I know Mike and I, you know, we want to grow a lot of food for us. We're just kind of dabbling in the market farm area, but just if you want to grow enough food for your family, maybe, or you're somebody like me who works full time and just want to have some access to local food. So we develop free garden course. The first five or six lessons are basically complete. And so, like I said, it's designed to be a course you can start one lesson at a time. And then the other thing I did for the beginning of January to go along with my 2018 garden journal data keeper is I created a garden goals challenge, and it's been very popular. I see the download numbers are really up there. So if you would like to join the garden goals challenge, I really gonna encourage you to go to the Organic Gardener podcast. You click on the podcast tab, and the garden goals challenges should come up. If you've never downloaded, if you don't listen to podcasts, certainly podcasts are really easy to do. If you're not a podcast listener and you like listening to audio, there's some great podcasts out there. There's lots of other garden podcasts, but there's podcasts on just about everything. You know, certainly Serial is a fun one I've been re-listening to on my drive, which is totally just off topic whatsoever, but I don't know why. I just like to listen to that one. It's about this murder that took place back in 1999, and Sarah Koenig, she's just a great storyteller, tells the story of the investigation. So it is a real story. So I'm just going to certainly encourage you to listen to some podcast. But I'm glad you're liking the Organic Gardener podcast interviews on Monday nights on Progressive Radio Network. Several of you have reached out to us already, which is always exciting to hear from listeners. And so if there's anything you'd like to learn, guests that you specifically like, let me know. All the archives are on our website. iTunes, I think, only holds about 100 podcasts up there. So I kind of try to recycle as much as I can things that I think will be interesting to you. So I'm so glad to be speaking to the Progressive Radio Network audience. And just if there's anything we can do, let us know. You can always reach me at organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. Mike's email is mikesgreengarden@gmail.com. We're certainly on Facebook. You can find us there. Join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. We'd love to hear from you, answer any of your questions, and just whatever we can do to help you build your organic oasis. So if you'd like to join the 2018 Garden Goals Challenge, just let us know. Just check it out on the Organic Gardener Podcast website. You can listen to the audio files and see all the show notes there. They're very simple, designed to be 5 to 10 minutes at the most, just to help you kind of organize your thoughts. And I frequently tell listeners, I always think journals are important because they're great places to go back and read. So thanks for listening.
Free the Seeds 2018 is March 3rd, Saturday, from 9 to 3:30 in the afternoon at the Flathead Valley Community College Arts and Technology Building, as it has been for the last 2 years. We're very excited. We've got some fabulous new workshops and additional booths at this event, and we're planning on distributing about 10,000 seed packets. So we're expecting a big crowd, and we want everyone to have a great time. And we've got a bunch of workshops on keeping chickens in today's world and beekeeping, how to garden like a farmer, all sorts of workshops on building your soil health of your garden, and how to convert your lawns to gardens with grace and ease. So lots of good stuff there. And if you want to volunteer, donate, or sponsor, just visit us at freetoseedsmontana.com.
The Organic Gardener Podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/OGP to support the show and see if you qualify. Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ customers because physically active people have a lower risk of heart disease, cancer, and diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Learn more and get a free quote at healthiq.com/OGP. I'm turning the recording on because I don't want to forget to turn it on later. But I always like to tell everybody at the beginning that because it's edited, you know, it's a podcast, and maybe you know a lot of this, that it is really easy to edit. So don't, you know, if you want to change an answer or like you need to let the dog out or get a cup of coffee or whatever, you know, don't hesitate to be like, I need to, or you want to think about something, go back to something.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? And then, so can I ask, are you a millennial? Like, because on my show, I really, I talk about rock star millennials all the time, and you just look like a rock star millennial to me. And I have this funny story to tell you. So I wrote this book called The Green Queen. Like, my goal is eventually to be a children's book illustrator. And like, after watching your videos, I'm like, this guy is the Green King. You and I have so much in common.
Yeah, right on.
Because I was reading your list of 10, what is it, water saving tips. And just, I could feel your, you and I just think a lot alike. I'll send you the link to the Green Queen book and you could check it out. I came up with the Green King idea is because like I was showing them these, I was back in New York and my friends I went to high school with, I was showing them and they're like, that's our son, except he's the Green King. But you remind me of like an older version, like the real Green King. So I don't know. Anyway, you might
I'm not quite a millennial. I was, you know, the dates, I'm definitely more of an X, but I like to say that I think, you know, funny about it. I feel like maybe it was one of the, like, archetype of the millennials. There's a lot of things that I don't get that they just like, I'm not ashamed to say, like, technology. Yeah, I'm not the greatest with technology sometimes.
What do you mean? Your videos are awesome. I love them. Yeah, you've got the cool music in the background. And
you know, yeah, that's other people's expertise. That's a friend of mine who's awesome. So that's just it. I like dealing with people who are awesome at what they do and like, hey, you're an expert in that. Great. You can do that. I don't need to be an expert in that. You know, I became an expert in kind of soils and that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, my birthday, I mean, I was born in 77, so I'm 40, you know, so a bit older than most millennials, but yeah, I get a lot of everything that they kind of their ethos, their reason for being. Like, I don't like golf or napkins or, I mean, you know, facetious, but cereal. I do like cereal, though, right? I'm sure you've heard that. It's like those things like the millennials have killed golf and cereal and Kleenex. I don't know. You know, just being silly.
No, but, those aren't the millennials I talk to. But I know. Right? I suppose there's some millennials out there that have some this reputation, but I'm trying to knock that reputation down because the millennials I talk to are hardworking, down to earth, care about the planet, want their technology to work, but I want my technology to work. So,
right. Yeah. I'm the same way. Like all the gardener people that we know that are millennials, like they're just driven, focused. Like I don't know too many millennial slackers, quite honestly, you know,
I've heard about
most of them are pretty awesome, you know? So,
yeah.
And I just attended this farming conference where like there's tons of millennial farmers. Like the executive director of PASA for sustainable agriculture was talking about how You know, there's 250 million farmers in the world. About 2 million of them live in the U.S. And of U.S. farmers in Pennsylvania, in the young farmers category, which is under 30, 60% are women. There's just like so many amazing statistics about farmers and how things are changing. And even though it's kind of, you know, it's not just backyards, it's slowly shifting. And yeah, the grand acreage is still not even close, but you know, just that there are more people thinking about sustainable farming and that there's so many young people getting involved in growing food for people on this planet. I think that's encouraging.
Me too. And there, like, I've been reading a lot of statistics lately that say things like a small 1 to 2 acre farm actually produces more food per acre than these big conventional farms. And I just think that's the way our culture is going to go, and people are going to be able to make a decent living. You know, it's going to be hard work and it's going to take a ton of energy, but I think people are going to be able to produce sustainable farms that, you know, can create green jobs. And I think my listeners in particular are interested in those jobs. Like, most of my listeners have been gardening, certainly a lot more than me. You know, they're more like my husband style, where his goal is to grow enough food for us, or they want to get into market farming, or at least, you know, maybe sell some of their produce. So I have a lot of entrepreneurial, you know, forward thinking. I call them the green future growers.
Nice.
So
yeah, it sounds like a lot of like market gardeners and, you know, just gardening enthusiasts that are doing the homesteading thing. And
yes. And people who are as passionate about protecting our planet as you are. So, all right. Well, should we just start? And I might put some of this in, like, is there anything that we talked about in the pre-chat that you would care, you wouldn't want me to put in?
No, you can put any of that in. That's fine.
Yeah, right. It was good. I thought it was good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll just start us off from here anyway, or today's. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. It is Sunday, February 11th, 2018, and I have an awesome guests on the line. And if I put this up raw, you'll have already heard a little bit of our pre-chat. He has an amazing business called Organic Mechanics Potting Soil. And his name's Mark Kylan. So welcome to the show, Mark.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, Jackie.
Well, you know, it's so funny. I can't believe we're talking already, because just last week when I was home on Sunday morning or Saturday, Mike said, hey, check out this guy. You should look at this book that he wrote. And look at his business. And I reached out to you, and here we are talking already the next week. So I'm glad you made that happen. And then soil is something, I mean, we talk about on my show a lot. And like Mike and I, over my Christmas break, I don't know if I told you that I teach full time. So over my Christmas break, we made a thing called freegardencourse.com. And the whole beginning, lesson one, is all about soil and getting soil. Because Mike, like, we spend a lot of money on soil. It's hard to come up with enough good soil. Like, he started this thing called the mini farm, which is like, I don't know, between a quarter and a third of an acre. And, you know, being able to keep, you know, that healthy. So, and then if he's going to have pots, you know, he's going to put the seeds pretty soon. He's going to plastic off our porch. I know he's going to be starting his seeds pretty quick here, even though we're in Montana and it was 10 below last week. And then, you know, and that's key. Potting soil is right there for that, right? I'll be quiet now. Go ahead.
Right. You know, I'm all about good soil, because the health of the soil is going to directly impact how healthy your plants can be. And certainly there's tons of research that shows that the volume of soil present for a plant to grow in will directly impact how big that plant can get. So yeah, good soil is key. Got to have it. And, you know, you got to build it to make that happen. So it takes a little bit of time and elbow grease, but, you know, certainly well worth the investment.
Okay. Well, tell listeners a little bit about yourself. Like, I always kind of start out the show asking about your very first gardening experience. Like, you know, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, where did you grow up? Or what was your first gardening experience?
Yeah, so I've definitely lived all over the place. But my first gardening memory was definitely working in my grandmother's vegetable garden with her. So I remember how big it was. I remember walking down the rows, looking at eggplant, picking asparagus. I remember getting the task of getting the 3-gallon bucket, walking over to this big like trash can looking thing, which is a 50-gallon drum, and dunking it in there, getting the water, and then walking down the rows and pouring out this like liquid on the plants down the rows. That was my job. And my grandparents lived on a farm in Illinois, and the neighbor had a dairy farm. So they got all the, you know, cow manure they could want. And so my grandmother had, it was anaerobic manure tea, essentially. It was in this bucket, and that's what I was scooping out and then going down the row and pouring it on the plants. So that's my first garden memory. I remember working in the garden with her when I was little. And then, you know, time goes on, and so I was in school, and I graduated high school. I'm going to college, and I was actually going for an art major. First, I was into ceramics throughout all of high school, and then I found glass blowing, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. I want to be a glass blower. So I went to school for a year to do that. And basically, at the end of my sophomore year, I was like, you know, I don't know if I want to get an MFA and move to New York City, because that's what I was being directed to do to be successful. My teachers love my stuff, and they're like, yeah, you can get into this school. I'll get you in, blah, blah, blah. In the end, I did some soul searching, and I was like, you know what? I don't think I want to do this. But I had to stay in state, and I had to find something else. And I found horticulture late at night on the computer, and I was like, what is this? Environmental horticulture? Because at the time, I'm not shy about saying it, I had total plant blindness. Have you heard that term before, plant blindness? Do you know what I mean?
No.
So the term, I think Richard Louv coined that term from his book, what is this book called? A Walk in the Woods, I think. It's about kids not getting enough time in nature, basically. I think he was the one who coined it. Anyway, but what it means, plant blindness, it's kind of like you see the world with a very gray lens when it comes to plants. I mean, at the time when I went into school, into horticulture at the University of Florida, I knew there was grass, trees, shrubs, flowers, and vegetables, but I didn't really differentiate. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can see, like, yeah, those are flowers. I get it. Like, those are trees, you know? And I knew some basic stuff, like acorns come from an oak tree. You know, like, I learned some of that stuff, but I didn't really put it all together. And then I got into school, and I was just like, oh, my gosh, this is a world I had no idea existed, that there's such diversity, and I mean, that is our ecosystems, and all, you know, that plants and animals are all, everything's connected. So that was very eye opening. And I fell in love with horticulture right away. And, I've been in horticulture ever since. So that was, kind of the start of things.
We've had such similar paths in a lot of ways. Like, when I first went to college, I went to art school in Brooklyn because that's what my high school art teacher, well, I can't say that. I went there because this girl that I went to high school with that I didn't think was a very good artist came back. And after a year there, I was like, oh my God, you're an amazing artist. That's where I want to go. That was what did it for me. But I always wanted to come to Montana, but I was scared to come to Montana. So I did that, never even made it through my first year. So when I came out to Montana, I went to art school. And after a year of art school, I was like, I don't want to learn how to paint. I want to learn about things that are going to inspire me to paint. And so I changed majors and became like a liberal arts major. And then I met my husband and took a break for a long time and then became a teacher in the end. But I fell in love with, like, so I always tell my stepkids, I always tell people, go to college not just because of what you want to learn, but you're going to find some obscure thing that you never knew existed. And I found, I was sitting in, I can't remember one class, but the person's, it was like social studies or journalism or writing or something. And somebody was telling me about this class they were taking studying wildflowers, and they got a job for the Forest Service going out in the woods. And like, you would build like a 10 by 10 foot radius, and you counted the flora and fauna that was in this 10 by 10 acre. And that's actually, I got a job doing that for the Forest Service, but it didn't quite work out. And that was like right when I had met my husband planting trees, and it was kind of all a crazy, but yeah, you never know that those jobs even exist. Like, who would have thought I would have got a job for the Forest Service counting trees out in the woods? But the woods were a little too big.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but what's similar? So you fell in love with horticulture instead.
I did. You know, it was just, you know, it was so eye-opening. I just loved learning about plants, how they worked, you know, the inner workings of the entire industry. I mean, there's such diversity in jobs. I mean, you can be a nursery grower and grow plants. You can be a nursery grower and grow trees. You can be a florist. You can be a tree person. Just work on trees, taking care, you know, an arborist. You can be a landscaper. You could be a designer. You could be a landscape architect. I mean, there's just so many. You could be a nursery grower. I mean, there's so many different things. And I didn't know exactly what I was going to do. But at the time, you know, in the 90s, when I was at the University of Florida, the textbooks all said, compost? Yeah, nope. Will never work in a potting soil. It's too variable. Can't do it. Won't work. And I thought, well, that just seems weird. Cause like I've been going to the farmers markets and talking to all these farms, and I visited some farms and worked on them, but kind of like volunteer in Gainesville when I was in college, and they were all using compost. And I was like, well, this, how, something's wrong here. Something's awry. And so I thought, well, there's not any really good organic potting soils on the market. Maybe I'll start an organic potting soil someday. I didn't know. Maybe nursery, maybe a landscape company. You know, I moved. I'm glad that I tried a lot of the different jobs in horticulture. You know, I worked for a garden center for a while. I worked for an interior plantscape company for a while. Then I worked for a farm out in Oregon. Then I started a design build landscaping company for some people out in Oregon. You know, I interned at some public gardens, came back east to go to grad school at Longwood Gardens and the University of Delaware. They had a program called the Longwood Graduate Program, which was awesome. And then I even worked as a stint as an arborist, as a plant healthcare technician for an arborist company. And so I've also been the grunt on the ground, hauling wood away after it gets cut down. I mean, I feel like the only job I didn't have was a florist, which, you know, it's, you get to do that at home and you bring flowers inside, arrange them on the, you know, the bathroom or whatever. It's fun to play around like that. But, yeah, there's just so many jobs in this industry, and you get to be outside. And, you know, some people hate cubicles, and I wouldn't mind working inside, I guess, but I love being outside. It helps you connect with nature a little bit more. It's just, you get to breathe fresh air a little bit more. I just, you know, feel like it was a good choice. That whole path led me to meeting my wife, because we were both at Longwood Gardens students at the time. And I just started bringing flowers and leaving them on her desk in the morning. And
started
dating, eventually got married. And that's, you know, so we were a Longwood love story. But, you know, and we stayed because this is a great area. And so that's, what, you know, I started the company here in Chester County, Pennsylvania, back in 2006. And, you know, I've been here gardening and ever since.
Where's Chester County in Pennsylvania? Like on the Philadelphia side or the Pittsburgh side or somewhere? Like, I don't know. Right? That's east and west.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's on the east side, closer to, we're about an hour outside of Philly. So,
cool.
Yeah, Chester County is a little bit west of Philadelphia. So we're very blessed to have the Greater Gardens of Philadelphia around here. There's, I forget the exact number, it's like 35 public gardens in this area. It's just amazing. You know, you have Longwood Gardens and Wintertour and Chanticleer and Mount Cuba Center and this Swarthmore College. There's the Scott Arboretum. And almost all the colleges around here have a little thing going. I mean, there's the Tyler Arboretum. There's the Jenkins Arboretum. The list goes on and on. I mean, there's Bartram's Garden. It's just, you know, which is a really cool one because, of course, you know, Bartram was the nation's most well-known plant explorer. And his property is preserved right outside of Philly. And it's just amazing to have all this horticulture history here. It just makes it fun because there's a lot of plant people locally. So we love it here.
Oh my gosh, it sounds so romantic. Your wife is so lucky. And well, so the interesting, so my husband saw the post on Facebook, and it was your interview on the Blog Talk Radio, or yesterday I talked to Lisa D. Smith, who interviewed you, and we're going to do a talk next week, and she's going to talk about some gardens. She's going to talk about gardens in national parks. So this is so exciting to hear about all these gardens. They sound so pretty and just gorgeous, and what history you've had. So now, do you, I guess I didn't do enough research about, like, is your business, like, on your property? Do you have a farm, too? Do you just do the soil? Just talk about whatever you want.
Yeah, sure, yeah. You know, basically, we, our business is not, I don't live on site. It's a tiny little town called Modena here in Chester County. But, you know, basically that's where we've operated out of for the past, we've probably been in this space for at least 6 or 7 years. But basically it's a big warehouse we rehabbed. So we have almost a half an acre production space, and the materials all deliver there. And then we kind of blend and mix everything up through the machinery, and then it's bagged and palletized and all that. So, you know, it's all 100% organic. Potting soil, soil amendments, et cetera. And on this property that we're at, friends of ours started a company about the same time we did. And it's called Waste Oil Recyclers. They recycle waste vegetable oil and turn it into biodiesel. It's used domestically. It's a pretty cool company. And in the beginning, when we were getting started, we were like, we need to have some gardens on this property. So we started building gardens. And that turned into essentially a summer almost CSA of sorts that grows food for the food bank, the Chester County Food Bank. And we have, there's students that come in from the Coatesville Youth Initiative, which is this nonprofit, and the kids learn life skills. And basically they take care of the garden all summer. They do all the weeding and planting and harvesting. And then like once a week, there's usually a chef that comes in to teach them about preparing healthy food. They eat from the garden every day. It's just, you know, so we have this CSA garden that kind of surrounds the property. The company itself, you know, operates there. But other than that, you know, really for me, running the company is a lot of hours in the week, and between that and you know, raising the family, that that keeps me pretty busy. But of course, somehow I found time to write a book and make that work. And,
tell everybody about the book. Sorry.
Well, yeah, it was fun. I mean, basically practical organic gardening. And, you know, I got asked to write this book. And it was labor love. I wrote it in 2016, and then it came out just basically around the holidays last year at the end of 2017. And it's definitely something in it for everyone. I think that there's things that even an experienced gardener can learn in it. However, it's great for any beginning gardeners or gardeners who want to learn more about organic gardening. Because I mean, in the first chapter I talk about, like, look, it's not just about the food. I mean, it is, but it's about more than that. And it's about really a paradigm shift in thinking about the bigger picture, the bigger ecosystem, and not just, you know, tunnel vision on your own property. I mean, just because the actions we take have impacts far beyond our own gardens. And then, I mean, it goes into all the subjects you would hope. I mean, it's a big part about soil and working soil and organic fertilizers and amendments. But then we talk about watering smart. And then there's like the care and cultivation chapter. Of course, there's a chapter on fighting pests and diseases, a chapter on propagating plants, because I think that that's a very fulfilling, self-gratifying part of gardening when you harvest your own seed and grow those plants next year, or you take cuttings to multiply your, you know, your plant collection and all those fun things. And then, of course, there's a little section on container gardening, section on lawns, and then about kind of recycling, reusing in the garden, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I got to work with some great people on this book, and essentially it was taking what I've learned over the past 20 years from gardeners who are more experienced and wiser than I, that taught me things, and things that I learned just from gardening, you know, and of course from going to school and all that, and you can't discount that. But, you know, a lot of this was information shared with me by other gardeners. And that is one of the most special, rewarding things about being in this industry, is talking with people about gardening, learning from them, because there's a million things. Even if you're the most experienced gardener, you've been gardening your whole life, you talk to 10 different gardeners, you're going to learn 10 different new things that you've never even thought of doing before. And that, you know, it's like whenever I was at all these different organizations, you know, it's very clear that, you know, the strength of an organization is always about the people that work there. And that's because, you know, the person-to-person interconnectedness, or you can't, you know, you can go to all the schools in the world, but sometimes you can learn a lot more just from talking with somebody who has been there, done that, and is willing to share. So that's kind of what I, you know, I poured my heart and soul into this book, but it's things that other gardeners have taught me, and, you know, and stuff I've learned just by experience. But
well, yeah, I think so what makes your perspective unique, and what's going to make this book, like, I was thinking everyone's going to want to get a copy to have as a handbook, but also, like, because you have this very scientific horticulture education background, you've probably taken a lot of the things that the gardeners have said and given, you know, you have the scientific to show, is this really true? Does this, you know, apply in the scientific world? Like, I just have a feeling that you have this scientific take on it that maybe somebody without your academic background is not going to have. I just can't imagine that's not in just in the back of your head. Like, when you're writing, it's got to come out. Am I wrong? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I've always been a writer. And one of the things that I think is one of my strengths really with writing, I guess, is that taking complex scientific information and then just making it very accessible.
Yeah.
So that's what I tried to do in the book. Yeah. And then for some things, when, you know, you learn something from a gardener, you know, try to, you know, my brain always wants to go to, like, the science of things. Like, how does that work? How is that possible? Like, oh, okay. And you can figure it out. And then, oh, that's why that works, because of, you know, whatever. So yeah, there's definitely some good science in there.
I could tell that right away, because there was something you explained to me in the pre-chat, and I'm like, oh, that's how it works. And I was thinking of, like, because I'm teaching fourth grade this year, and we're actually right smack in the middle of the chapter on plants, and I don't have a teacher's manual. And I mean, I know some stuff. I know a lot. I'm sure I know a lot, but, like, teaching without the teacher's manual for me is really tough. And I just have the kids' textbooks. It's always nice to, like, part of me is like, I wish I could get them to listen to this interview, because you've said so many things that we've, and then also we got a new reading program where we talk a lot about gardening. So but that's exactly it. Like, you have this knack for taking pretty complex, like you said, complex scientific topics and bringing them down that's easy for everyday people to see. And also, I felt like when I saw your website, you have really easy action steps people can take that they can already start making changes right away, like your saving water tips. And just even your video about how to hold the can around the plant and water right is, like, huge.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like to think that's one of my strengths, and you know, kind of, yeah, sometimes it's in the details, right? And, like, how to water, like, yeah, try not to splash the leaves. I mean, sometimes it is appropriate, depending on what you're doing and what your intent is, but yeah, most of the time it's like, yeah, don't get those leaves wet, you're just going to encourage powdery mildew, you know, that's just not good.
No, and you know what? I sent an email out this week and asked my listeners, like, what questions they would have if Mike and I did a live Q&A or something. And that was somebody's question: how do I get rid of powdery mildew? And that was exactly what I was going to tell her, that I've learned from talking to my guests, is try to keep that undergrowth dry. Try to get any dead leaves out of there, like, clean that out. Like, that's something, I don't know, Mike's probably been doing, because, like I said, he's been the gardener, but I didn't really pay attention to till I listened to my podcast. And the other thing I was going to say that you said is, I think that's what's made my show a success, is, like, people willing to share the stories that they've been telling you is what my listeners do. And we appreciate you sharing, because I feel like you've dropped a ton of golden seeds today for everybody already.
Well, thanks. You know, I try.
So,
but yeah, talking about gardening is the best, you know.
Do you want to tell people, like, where do you get your soil? Or do you have, like, some suggestions for how they could, if they're not in Pennsylvania? Like, you deliver things, right? You have wholesale for dealers and retailers. Like, where can people get your potting soil? Is it only local, or?
So we have about almost 400 retailers that carry our products from Maine to Florida, out towards Chicagoland area. Certainly most of them are from like Boston to DC in that area. But you know, the website has a where to buy page where you can scroll into your hometown and see who's close to you, if anybody's close to you. We are not out west very much because, you know, the soil is heavy and costs a lot to ship. So, and there's local providers of soil out there too. But we do ship, and, if you can find our products, there's tons of info on the website about what product is right for the intended use. So you can kind of go on and read about that stuff. And but if you can't find our stuff locally, certainly compost is my number one go-to item in the garden. Our company is, when I started Organic Mechanics, I wanted it to be, a true organic, earth-friendly option for gardeners. And so environmental sustainability is like a core value at Organic Mechanics. And so to that end, we chose to be a peat-free soil company. So we use coconut core and compost to replace the peat in our mixes. And then we also did things like replace perlite, which is the white stuff you see in potting soil that crunches like a little rock. We replaced the perlite with rice hulls, because rice hulls are more earth-friendly, 100% organic. They also break down over time. You're not left with the white stuff swirling around in the garden. So it looks a bit more natural.
Where are you getting those at?
So rice hulls, they're domestic. There's a lot of rice grown in the U.S., actually. There's rice grown in Florida, Louisiana, Arkansas. There's a lot of wild rice grown up in Wisconsin, Minnesota. California has their fair share of rice out there too. But yeah, they're great. So it's the shell around the rice, and they are parboiled to get rid of any weed seed or, any pathogens that might be present. And they're just super fluffy, and they just kind of fluff up the mix. They provide drainage. And when they break down over time, they give back phosphorus and silicon to the, kind of microbes in the soil solution. And it's fantastic. Like you slice open a root ball when we did all our trials initially to see if it would work. And eventually the rice hulls do disappear. They're eaten by soil microbes, by bacteria, because they're a source of carbon. And so bacteria, when they eat carbon, they leave behind these, polysaccharides. It's a very sticky substance, kind of like glue. So this sticky stuff really helps to hold the soil together. It's like building soil structure. And so the rice hull was gone, but that little carved out almost canoe-like shape was still there in the soil because the bacteria produced the sticky stuff. The soil held together, so the pore space remained even though the rice hull was gone. After I saw that, I was like, oh yeah, no, this will work. We can totally use it instead of perlite. It'll all be fine. So we did that back in 2009. Our stuff is sold at garden centers and natural food stores. So everything from your local co-op to Whole Foods Market carries it. And then when I say garden centers, I mean like the mom and pop plant shops, not the box stores. So we're at like the mom and pop garden shops, and some of them are much more, even though they may be huge, like the size of a department store, it was usually started by a mom and pop back in the day, right? And then it just grew over time. Like the garden stores, the garden centers, we're not in the box stores. It's just very hard to compete as a small company up against the giants like Scott's, Miracle-Gro, So we can't compete with them on price. So we'll compete on, quality and customer experience of, and so we've gone with the independent garden centers, which there's a lot of around the country. You usually can find one close to you. And they're super fun. That's like my favorite thing to do when I was a lot younger. Me and my garden friends. We'd show up at somebody's house in the morning. We'd have a bunch of coffee. Then we'd go to the garden center, go looking for plants, unusual, rare things. That's still, to this day, one of my favorite activities is going to garden centers and looking at plants.
We took the garden club on a trip to the garden center last year. It was so fun. I was more into doing math and counting arrays because we were learning about multiplication at the time. But always good. And it just smelled good. And you could just see the work. Like, it was amazing how much stuff they had in there. And it was a mom and pop. The girl, actually, who did the garden club with me, her parents were like some of the original, I don't think they were the original owners, but they're like the original managers. Like, they've been there forever.
Mm.
Let's take a minute to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. The Organic Gardener Podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/OGP for Organic Gardener Podcast to support the show and see if you qualify. Over half of Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ customers because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, a 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people just like you, green future growers. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/OGP or mention the promo code OGP when you talk to a Health IQ agent. It's my first sponsor, Robin Kelson from the Good Seed Company. Welcome, Robin.
Yay! Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and very happy to be your sponsor. We have a large variety of locally adapted, open-pollinated, non-GMO vegetable, flower, and herb seeds, both for the kitchen table and the medicine cabinet. And we hope you'll enjoy visiting our website, goodseedco.net or Good Seed Montana, and seeing the resources that we offer for becoming a better gardener, a better seed saver, and a member of building resiliency around food in your community.
Hello. We're probably towards the end of the interview, but do you want to go through, like, I call it like getting to the root of things. It's kind of like my lightning round, like with some basic questions, like when you're working in the garden, like, is there a least favorite activity you kind of have to force yourself to do, or maybe in your business?
Yeah. Least favorite activity in the garden is definitely weeding. I mean, you know, it's gotta be it for everybody because you're an organic gardener, you're pretty much hand weeding. And of course, the key to that is being persistent when the weeds are young and take them out with a scuffle hoe, undercut hoe, winged weeder, call it what you want. But the hoes with it that can just like knock out weeds pretty quick when they're young. But inevitably, I get busy. I'm sure everybody gets busy. And there's a section of the garden that always gets overgrown. So you got to get in there and weed it. And you just got to do it. I'm not able to pop up and squat down and pop up and squat down and pop up and squat down as fast as I used to. So, you know, I gotta like take it easy, but you know, thankfully, we have finally raised up the little gardeners. So we've got the 6-year-old can grab the little piles and put them in a big pile. So finally we're getting a little help. But that's my least favorite activity is weeding.
That's so awesome. Well, you know what I was thinking, what you were saying before about being in a cubicle, like my theory is garden in the morning when it's cool and then go inside and do your computer or artwork stuff in the afternoon in the cool when the house is cool and it's too hot to be outside. So you have a little bit of both in each day, but try to get, you know, the more, which for me is often hard, but the more exercise you can get in the morning or gardening in. Anyway, on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Favorite activity would be planting, you know, bulbs, plants, you name it. You know, like the annual time of year where you get to plant all the garlic, that's super fun. You know, because it's, you're building something, and when you're done, you can see like, all right, I just did all that, everything's planted, you know, good to go. You know, between that and then just what my wife and I like to call our garden walk. So in the morning, yeah, we like to get out there early. So you go out and just walk the line, right? So we have a lot of containers still. So we walk and look at the containers. What's blooming? Oh, that's cool. Because you don't want to miss it. Because sometimes things are only blooming for a few days, and then you know you got to wait till another flower comes out, or you got to, you know, sometimes the bloom season is short on things. So it's just really kind of looking at the garden, and then while we're doing that, we're also scouting for insects, pests, right? Because you got to be vigilant. You got to look for the up. I see some holes starting on that kale over there. Like, we got to go over and pick off the cabbage looper, you know, larva, caterpillars. So that's another way to be connected with your garden, the garden walk. So planting things and just being present in the garden. Those are some of my favorite things. Cause you get to hear the birds chirping and you're just totally connected with nature at that point. And it's just, you know, it's Saturday morning, you're out there with your coffee. It's good stuff.
Oh, I totally agree. What's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
If you're not killing plants, you're not really gardening.
Nice.
Right? Because yeah. You have to learn, you know? And so I don't get sad. Well, maybe a little sad. If I kill a plant, I'm like, all right, well, I'll try again. You know, maybe it was in the wrong spot. Which is also why I love to garden in containers, because when you're thinking about, all right, do I want to sink this plant in the ground right there? You can leave it there for a month, a season, whatever you want. And if it flourishes in the pot in that spot, well, then it's probably going to do well in the ground in that spot. Because sometimes it's the balance of how much light do I have? Is there too much shade over here? I don't know, for this particular plant. because I think a lot of us garden in less than ideal conditions. And if you have ideal conditions, man, good on you. That's great, you know. But I think a lot of people are dealing with, like, less than ideal. And you got to kind of, you can pick and choose that way. And that way, if you sink it in the ground before you know, I mean, you're just creating a whole bunch more work for yourself. But so...
Or heartbreak, because if it's in the wrong spot, like you said, it doesn't grow.
Right, right. Or like it gets plagued with pests. You know, like you shouldn't put certain plants out in full sun because they really need partial shade to do well. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, you're dropping tons of golden seeds. And nobody's really put it that way. But like, as I think back on all the things that I've tried here, wouldn't it have been better if I would have put stuff in a plant first? And like, because I've learned those things. Oh, not enough sun here. I'm always the, like, I put things in the shade and don't put, give them enough sun. Like Mike and I have this one tree we keep fighting about whether he should cut it down or not. And I'm like, no, come August, those plants are going to need the shade. And he's like, yeah, but they don't grow enough in the spring. And I don't know. Anyway, how about a favorite tool that you like to use? Like if you guys had to move again, what's one tool you would want to take with you and couldn't live without?
My garden tool that I can't live without is my Hori Hori knife. Do you know those?
Yeah. I mean, people have recommended them. We don't have one.
You know, right. Looks like a dagger. It's got, you know, serrated on one side, super sharp. The good ones have like a hilt on the edge to make it safer for you using it. But they're great digging tools. You can divide plants with them. You can dig out a, you know, a dandelion. I mean, you can dig out roots with them if you need to. They're just indestructible. Comes in a nice sheath. So between that and a pair of felcos and a good pruning saw, like, you need that stuff to manage a garden. In my opinion, those are indispensable garden tools.
Nice. I interviewed this woman who had this thing called the Digit, but I think her husband or her son also made a Hori Hori. She's got like these three really cool tools. I should get Mike a Hori Hori. I bet he would like one if he had one. How about, do you have a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden or something your wife makes or something your kids like to eat?
Yeah. I mean, definitely there's nothing like fresh snap peas from the garden. Cause I remember picking those. My dad grew those with me and he's not really he's a little bit of a gardener, but I remember him growing those with me when I was little and loved them. Our kids just love those. Between that and cherry tomatoes, I grow cherry tomatoes for the kids as well. Just because they, you know, we're trying to instill this love of gardening and of being outside, because they're like all kids. They love their electronics time when they get it and all that stuff. But thank goodness they still like being outside too. And so being able to pick things right off the vine and eat them, that's a classic experience for me and our family.
Yeah, good for you. I'll bet your kids are going to treasure these moments forever. How about a favorite internet resource? Where do you like to surf on the web?
So there's a couple good ones. There's a whole page of them in the book of resources. But do you know about the ATRA website, A-T-T-R-A?
You could mention again, because I've gotten a lot of new listeners, and I don't think anybody's mentioned it since August.
Okay. So that one is basically it's the ATRA Sustainable Agriculture Program, which is the National Center for Appropriate Technology. They just basically they provide information and technical assistance on all aspects of sustainable agriculture. That's ATRA, ATRA.NCAT.org. So that one's great, right? Then there's also, we're very lucky here in Pennsylvania to be close to the Rodale Institute. So the Rodale Institute was started by J.I. Rodale, and that eventually turned into Organic Gardening, the magazine. But the Institute has been a research farm, you know, ever since it was founded. And they recently completed a 30-year farming systems trial of organic versus conventional, proving that organic had, in the long run, higher yields, more nutrient-dense food, tons of different things. So we're very blessed to have them close by, but theirs is just rodaleinstitute.org. So that's two really good ones.
I love that. And I'm totally thinking, like, I might put this episode up, and I just interviewed Paul Kita from Rodale's Men's Health magazine, because he just wrote a book called A Man, A Pan, and a Plan. And I just think these would both make great, awesome Valentine's Day episodes this week, because you're so romantic with your wife, and he's got the cooking piece, so guys can cook for their wives, or just if you want to cook for your husband, even if you're a wife. Because like he said, his book is not just for men. And he's just, ever since I did his interview, I've been cooking more in my apartment. He really inspired me. So I think these two might go perfect together. And of course, I think we talked a little bit about the Rodale. Yeah, because he's right there. We did. His apartment's like right near there. And that's totally what inspired me. I mean, I love Rodale. I always wanted to work for Rodale as in New York City for the Organic Gardening magazine, which is now Organic Life.
Right.
How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine?
Well, I have less and less time to read, sadly, these days. But, you know, when I am reading articles, the magazines that I get are some of my industry magazines. There's one called Green Profit, which is also, the other side is Grower Talks. So if you're like in the industry, the one side's all about IGCs, independent garden centers, and the other side is about growing plants and nurseries and that kind of thing. So I read that, but we have a organization locally called PHS, Pennsylvania Horticulture Society. And they're a phenomenal organization. They do work all over outside of Philadelphia and beyond. But they have their magazine called Grow, which has tons of great articles in it. So regionally, that one's great. And then the books that I just finished reading were the Jeff Lowenfels series that he wrote, Teeming with Microbes, Teeming with Nutrients, and Teeming with Fungi, as in like T-E-A-M, Teeming with. So that was a great series, awesome info in there. Yeah, a couple things.
Awesome. Tell listeners a little bit more about your book. I wanted to ask you something about, where did I write down those chapters? But I felt like I meant to go back to it, because I felt like I kind of cut you off at one point and you were going to tell us about your book. Like, did you have things you wanted to talk about that you haven't had a chance to mention, or...
Well, I mean, as far as the book goes, I mean, definitely that first chapter, I try to lay it out for people as to why I think organic farming and organic gardening is important. And it's not necessarily like, and there's nothing wrong with hippies, believe me, but it's not a hippie manifesto. I mean, I'm trying to provide like real reasons why we as human beings on the planet should be concerned about our air, our water, our soil, growing food, the ability to keep growing food, you know, that we really need to have this like total paradigm shift to thinking about what we're doing so that everyone can eat healthy food and drink water, you know, 100 years from now, 500 years from now. It's important, you know. So I, But I try to set that stage in very easy to understand grounded terms, right? Because there's very simple goals to aim for in organic gardens that, you know, they should positively encourage environmental feedback loops. They should build soil health and productivity. They should help absorb water and nutrients. They should, you know, contributing to producing fresh air for everyone. They should, also, because they're not just vegetable gardens, it's also ornamental plants, because those ornamental plants are the primary plant, trophic level of food to feed insects and all higher trophic levels, right? I mean, birds feed their babies a couple hundred caterpillars a day when they're little, right? And if we don't have native plants so that the native insects can then eat those plants and produce babies for the birds to eat, I mean, that's just one part of the cycle. But you know, they should also be places of replenishment for the body and soul, because gardens connect us to the natural world. And there's very few things on the planet that can do what gardens do for human beings. Forests included, like the forest is like nature's garden, right? So it's what we do in our backyards and our properties, our gardens, but you know, there's a big forest out there too. And you know, I like to think of every garden as a little oasis. You may be an organic gardener, but maybe all your neighbors aren't. So maybe your property is the one that the insects come to, the birds come to, but the more people that start to garden organically, the more of those oases that there are, the more biological activity that we can all support on the planet. It's a spectrum, organic gardening. You know, there's a reason why a farm, when they're starting out to be organic, it's a 3-year transition period, right? So nothing is perfect. No one is perfect right away. Everything has to be learned and built. So even if you only incorporate, let's say you're in transition, like, hey, you've been a conventional gardener your whole life because that's just what you know. There's nothing wrong with that. You're still a gardener. And if you want to transition into organic and be a bit more earth friendly, sustainable, there's tons of things you can learn. It's a process. And, you don't have to be scared like, oh, it's going to be too hard. Organic gardening is going to be much more work. It's not really much more work. It's about the same. Some of the tips in the book are just practical gardening tips. It just so happens that they're organic too. Like looking at trees and making sure you don't have, girdling roots going around your trees, because you want your trees to get big and healthy. You know, you don't want them to die when they're 20 years old because the nursery that grew them had it in a pot too long and the roots were circling too long. There's just little things. So I think there's room for everyone to be an organic gardener. And it starts with the first action, and you just build and build, and because there's always more things to dial in your organic gardening. So, yeah, that was pretty much with the book. And like I said, I mean, there's tons of info. I kind of go in deep on soil, and then in the end, it is only 70,000 words, so I couldn't go into everything. So. But there's a lot of great base information there that you can then take to the next level if you're that interested in a particular topic. This is enough to get you going and then give you the resources to look further. So,
but yeah. To me, it's like a manual for teaching your neighbors. Like, I can totally picture somebody like buying the book and teaching a class to their neighborhood, because like you said, or you know, I keep thinking, because I grew up in New York in a very wealthy suburb, and my mom is exactly what you're talking about. She's all natural. Unfortunately, she lives backed up to a Waldorf school, so the Waldorf school is all natural, but the rest of the neighbors on her block are not. And who does their lawns? The landscapers. And so to me, it's like, we need people to teach those landscapers. Because the people aren't going to care. The landscapers might even be able to charge more, or just a little bit, like a premium price, because you want to be premium, right? The race to the bottom is just the bottom of the person loses, and second to the bottom is no good. So you want to be a premium person. But teaching those neighbors and teaching their landscapers, and it seems like your book could be this really nice manual for people to be able to say, hey, neighbor, I'm asking you to do that. You might not even know. A lot of people probably don't even know, have no idea. I can't believe how many people I met this summer. They're like, Jackie, guess what? I started a garden. You've got your garden podcast. Look what I'm doing. And look at all this cool chemicals I'm putting on it. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm glad you started a garden. And it's like breaking that. Like, I don't even like when I ask people, will you be on my show? I don't even think. And they'll be like, oh, I can't because I'm not really organic or I put use these. And I'm like, real, like, I just forget that people even do that. Like, there's even some Facebook groups out there that I belong to that I almost fell over one day. I was like, no way, you're putting all those chemicals on your stuff. And like you said, nurseries. And a couple of, one of the best guests I had was this guy down in New Mexico who had an organic nursery. And he talks about very similar path to you. Went to school in Colorado for horticulture. They taught him this totally different way. But then when he opened his nursery, he found that his clients were more successful. The customers, the people who came and bought his plants, if they were using native plants and they weren't, and they were going the organic natural way. And then Bob Quinn, who's this Montana farmer, who's really exploding these days. I see him all over Facebook and different places now. His blog's been exploding because he started out dry farming in eastern Montana and growing, he grows this Camu wheat that he actually imports to Italy. They also grow farro, which I was thinking would be something instead of rice. In Montana, you can grow farro here with very little water or dry farming on the east side. And it's a native rice to Montana. And just, there's so many, you've dropped a ton of golden seeds. And you're probably like, my kids need me and I need to end this conversation. So I'm not even going to ask you my final question because you kind of answered that there. But if you just have a tip or a quote to help motivate listeners to reach into that, into the dirt and start their own garden, and then tell us how to connect with you, and then we'll let you get back to your day.
Right on. Well, and I also, I did want to mention one other thing as well, which we can go back to that.
You can talk as long as you want.
okay. because I remembered, because you asked me like what I read and where I get, you know, current information from and whatnot. And you were just talking about, you know, teaching landscapers some of these practices as well, because they have a much bigger impact than just one garden, right? Like you have the impact on your own garden, but they're taking care of perhaps, you know, hundreds of gardens and educating their clients about sustainable practices. Because, I mean, let's face it, a lot of times landscapers get hired because the homeowner is too busy and just can't do all the landscape work, can't do all the gardening work, but they want the garden. You know, they want all the benefits of a garden, so they just pay someone else to do it. And that's fine. That's absolutely brilliant. But so they have this opportunity, it's landscapers. So there's an organization called the ELA. It's the Ecological Landscape Alliance. And the ELA, it's an organization based out of New England, but the work they're doing is applicable nationwide. And their website is a phenomenal resource. They have these newsletters that go out with killer articles. And, you know, when you're a member, then you can sign on for webinars. You know, it's a very economical membership for all the benefits you get out of it. They have so much information, and the ELA is very much like science-driven. There's info for landscapers, there's info for gardeners, there's info for designers, landscape architects. Like, it's just excellent resource. It's ELA, Ecological Landscape Alliance. I highly recommend checking out that website, becoming a member. You know. So that's, yeah, it's a great organization. You know, full disclosure, I'm on the board. But when I was in college, like, ELA was like the best organization out there that I aspired to having a poster session there when I was done with my master's thesis research. And I did, I had it. I was just like, oh my gosh, I presented at ELA. It was amazing. And then I, you know, just out of the blue was contacted by someone and asked to interview for the board. And I did end up getting nominated and I joined the board. But, it's just a phenomenal organization, and you know, you don't have to take my word for it. Go look. It's killer. Like, and for the membership, the webinars alone are totally worth it. These are some of the biggest names in horticulture, agriculture. They have an annual conference each year. Anyway, yeah. So yeah, I talked enough about ELA, but really great organization and great articles. Great place for educational resources.
See, who knew? I love all of that. And, gave your thesis, gave the poster. I don't know. I forgot what I was going to say, but, I think people are going to be really, really interested. Well, I've been talking to a lot of people and like, you know, you hear the big debate about going to college anymore. And just like, this is like an, like an option for people who maybe don't want to do 4 whole years, but could invest for, it sounds like a very, very affordable fee. And then, and that, oh, that's what I was going to say in the beginning. Like, you're just a, this natural entrepreneurial, like, I love the way you've gone about learning from other people. You talk about having all these other different jobs, but that's really built up your education. You've seen all these different practices put into place. Like, your journey is very unique and you have a lot. And I think your book is going to be a complete success because, and listeners, don't let me forget, if you get his book on Amazon or wherever you get it, go and leave a review, because, and even if you don't buy it, but you get it from your library or you get it somebody, or just from hearing this thing, if you can feel like you can leave him a review, because that will help other people read it. That's the biggest thing that drives me crazy. When somebody has a killer podcast and I don't hear about it, and I go look and they have like 10 reviews, and I'm like, what is wrong with your audience? Go write those people a review so that more people can learn. So if you get Mark's book and you like it, or, you know, just try to get that out there, because I just know, I can tell from talking to you, like, you are kind of a lot like my avatar, and my listeners are, you know, can really relate to the things you're saying, and it will help them when they go to Thanksgiving dinner and they're trying to, you know, talk to the other people in their family or at the water cooler or at school or at the doctor's office or whatever. I mean, another big place, the doctor's office, and try to educate the other people. Your book would be a great manual and some backup proof to have there and say, well, here's the science, because you have this big, strong science background. Anyway, go ahead and tell listeners how to connect with you. Or did you want to have a tip? Did we skip that? Because you were going to, I don't know.
So I guess for, you know, a parting tip would be, you know, really it's all about applying yourself, right? And just doing it, because that's how I gained all this experience. I just did it. You know, I had a path that was all over the place, but I just kept pushing myself to do more, learn more, always doing, you know, more than I physically thought was possible. And, you know, I just, you know, I've always been a fan of like, look, if you can push your body to do it, you can do it. You know, within reason, of course, but, yeah, so that aspect of my life helped me learn a lot, because I just kept pushing myself to do more experiences. Like I pushed myself to write the book, even though I was way too busy, but I still did it. That experience of working hard, pushing yourself to try new things in the garden, take a class at your local botanic garden or your local university, read more books, you know, educating yourself, whether it's hands-on or book reading, is, the, in my opinion, one of the smartest things you can do. And yeah, I mean, the time at college, it certainly helped me, and it prepared me, and my master's thesis taught me a lot more about the scientific method. And, you know, I learned a lot from those things, but I also learned a lot from all the people that I interacted with along the way. And, you know, so getting out there, join the local garden club, you know, there's a million things you can do, but the more of that stuff you do, the more you're going to learn, the more successful gardener you're going to be. I mean, I got this way because I worked my tail off my whole life, and that's why I'm here, and anybody can do that. I mean, that's the beauty of it, is that anybody can do it. You just have to apply yourself.
That's, I love all that. Cool. Well, tell listeners how to connect with you. I know they're going to be reaching out to you, because you're just, I don't know, you're just like one of those guests that I get on that people can totally relate to.
Well, you, certainly there's social media. You know, we're on Instagram. It's Organic Mechanic Soil. Only one S for soil. Organic Mechanic or singular. And certainly on Facebook, it's the Organic Mechanics Soil Company. On Twitter, it's Organic Mechanics with an IX at the end. The traditional spelling, like Organic Mechanics, that was taken when I went to grab a Twitter account all those years ago when it started. I forget if it was a jewelry company or a DJ that took that first. And so I missed the opportunity. But anyway, it's Organic Mechanics with an IX. And if you go to our website, you'll see all that stuff is there. The website's Organic Mechanics Soil, organicmechanicssoil.com. Again, just one S for soil. If you Google search organic mechanic soil, it comes right up. So that's those ways. And then on the contact us page, you know, there's my email address is there, mark@organicmechanicssoil.com. So that's some of the best ways to connect with the company. You know, and of course I should be posting more and, you know, yes, my blog is on the website, but you know, I haven't posted anything on that since like 2011 because I've just been too busy and, you know, things happen and I just haven't gone back to it. And that goes back to that technology thing I mentioned earlier. Like I'm just so bad with technology when it comes to that. I need more time in the day to have someone teach it to me all over again. And then maybe I'd start back up. But, the major ways are like Instagram, Facebook, and then, yeah, other than that, you know, the website has tons of info on organic mechanics and organic gardening in general. And, yeah, those are the best ways to reach me, to follow us and keep the conversation going.
Excellent. And check out his book. So thanks so much for sharing with us today, Mark. You have been just this awesome guest and you were like, it's 15 minutes, right? I know in the beginning and I'm sorry it's taken so long. So you have an awesome day.
Yeah, same to you.
Okay.
Free the Seeds 2018 is March 3rd, Saturday from 9 to 3:30 in the afternoon at the Flathead Valley Community College Arts and Technology Building, as it has been for the last 2 years. We're very excited. We've got some fabulous new workshops and additional booths at this event, and we're planning on distributing about 10,000 seed packets. So we're expecting a big crowd, and we want everyone to have a great time. And we've got a bunch of workshops on keeping chickens in today's world and beekeeping, how to garden like a farmer, all sorts of workshops on building your soil health of your garden, and how to convert your lawns to gardens with grace and ease. So lots of good stuff there. And if you want to volunteer, donate, or sponsor, just visit us at freetheseedsmontana.com.
The Organic Gardener Podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/OGP to support the show and see if you qualify. Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ customers because physically active people have a lower risk of heart disease, cancer, and diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Learn more and get a free quote at healthiq.com/OGP. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener Podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.